tonight to the April 7th Othello City Council Workshop. We have a full agenda tonight, so let's start with our Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I'd like to make a general statement. Can everyone hear me in the back? You guys, volume is fine. Is there anyone in need of any special hearing devices? Okay. Very good. Roll call 1.02 on our agenda. Tonight, the full council is here with the exception of Dan Deaver. Dan Deaver has some medical issues that he's attending to. He's going to be gone for the rest of this month, probably May, potentially into June. We'll see how his recovery comes. So we wish him well, and I would entertain a motion to excuse Dan Deaver from the meeting tonight.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
A motion made and seconded to excuse Dan Deaver. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. Item 1.03, citizen input. Is there any citizen here present in the meeting who would care to give input to the Othello City Council tonight? Please raise your hand. Let's wait for Ken and Barbara Kaler. They're walking in. Ken and Barbara, we're at the citizen input portion of the meeting tonight. Would you care to offer any input to the Othello City Council tonight? Okay, all right, very good, thank you. Hearing none, we'll move on. Our first item on our current of business, 2.01, the Othello Housing Authority report. And with us, we have the director, the executive director of the Othello Housing Authority, Dave Anderson. Dave.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. A lot of new faces I don't know here. I'm Dave Anderson. I'm the executive director of the Othello Housing Authority. And Spencer and I had been talking, and then several of you have actually contacted me, that there was an interest in having me maybe come to council and talk to you a little bit about what we do regarding our payment in lieu of property tax. We call it the pilot, payment in lieu of tax. And so that's why I'm here tonight. The Housing Authority is not bound, almost all of our properties are tax exempt, and because of the nature of the low income housing that they provide. We do have one piece of property that its tax status fluctuates or can fluctuate every year. That's Desert Haven out on the end of 7th Avenue. But other than Desert Haven, all the rest of them are tax exempt. And so from I'm not exactly sure when the Housing Authority started making a payment in lieu of tax, but I believe it was back at the beginning of the formation of the Housing Authority. It's a long time ago anyway. And so we make a total of just a little over $75,000 of payments a year in lieu of property tax. We own, inside town here, we own 8 separate properties. And we manage Desert Haven for Catholic Charities. So there's Oasis Apartments and Harvest Manor Apartments and the Parkview Apartments and Lions Park Apartments and our Main Street project and HUD. And actually, did I give them all? Cedar Park Apartments. And each one of those, they pay their own separate payment in lieu of tax. Two of them, all but two of them, they have the same set amount of tax, a payment in lieu of tax every year. It doesn't fluctuate. And that was set for each one of those properties. It was set back when the properties were acquired by the Housing Authority or when the property was developed by the Housing Authority. And it was based on the assessed value of the property at the time the Housing Authority acquired it. And so that But the other two that are different than that, and they're based on, they have a formula, HUD, which, do you guys all know where the Housing Authority office is up on 3rd? And yeah, that housing in there, it all looks kind of similar. They're duplexes and some single houses, but that's the HUD housing. HUD has a formula that is prescribed to us for payment in lieu of tax. And we apply that, so that's how that one is calculated. I'm going to tell you about that. But we also apply that same formula to our Main Street project. And our Main Street project are the houses, the old Bureau housing on Main Street down there between 9th and 10th Avenue on the north side of town, and the two new duplexes that were just constructed. And we apply the same formula for that. So those two can change year from year to year. They don't fluctuate much because the formula is the rent income of the previous year less the utilities that we pay and 10% of that. So our rents fluctuate a little tiny bit from year to year, not very much, and usually they do increase a nominal amount, and so the pilot can increase a nominal amount. HUD pays the housing around HUD, that's low-income housing, that pays a pilot of $12,500 a year. Our Main Street operation, which is pretty small, it pays a pilot of $5,500. Parkview Apartments, Alliance Park Apartments pay a HUD, pay a payment in lieu of tax of $10,000 each. Oasis Apartment is $13,000. Cedar Park is $8,800. Harvest Manor is $4,600. And Desert Haven is the one I was just mentioning that we manage for Catholic Charities. Depending on the income mix of the residents on January 1st, if they meet a certain threshold, then their units are exempt. If 75% of the residents meet that threshold, then the entire project is tax exempt. If anything less than 75% meets that threshold, then the property is actually taxed at whatever that percent it is. And so for the last 5 or 6 years, the pilot is only $3,500. But because less than 75% of the units house people at a certain poverty level, we've been paying property tax in the 60 to 70% range, just under the 75%. So for instance, this year we paid a $10,400 property tax. The way, and of course the property tax goes straight to the treasurer just like your property taxes do. The pilot, up until next year, the pilot was always made directly to the city of Othello. And the finance director then took that money and sent it into the treasurer's office. I think the way they did it is they notified the treasurer's office at the county level of the amount of money the pilot was, and the treasurer then divided it up amongst all the taxing districts to get a share, because the city is just one taxing district that gets a share of this. The hospital district, the fire district, the cemetery district, they all get a share based on their levy. Anyway, that money gets, then the city was told by the county treasurer, send that out to each one of the taxing districts, so the city would write a check to each taxing district for their share. The way everybody else in the county does it, though, is that the money goes straight from whoever owes this pilot. It goes right to the treasurer, and then the treasurer divides it up and distributes it. Starting next year, that's the way it's going to happen with the city, too. So it'll be much cleaner and easier and nice. So anyway, so that's how the pilot's calculated. That's how the pilot's paid. That's how it gets distributed. It's distributed based on your actual levy rate. So whatever your levy rate is, then you get that portion per thousand of the total assessed value, or of the total pilot. Clear as mud?
Excellent explanation, Dave. Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming tonight. Council, did you have some questions?
No, I really appreciate it too, Dave. I know we talked about this a couple months ago, and I'm glad to see that they're going to change the way that it's going to be dispersed, because that's what brought it up to my attention. You know, we were seeing this large check come in, and then it was going right back out to the county, and kind of question, and there's a lot of perception out there that the Housing Authority don't pay any taxes because they're tax exempt. And it's nice to know, and it's nice to get it out to the public that you do pay your fair share of taxes. And not only does it come to the city, but it goes to all the entities, the library, the fire, and everybody else, all the junior taxing districts. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Dave, for coming. The next item on our agenda, item 2.02, is a park use request presented by Molly Clipper, and it's a request from the Othello Christian Church.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm here tonight to present a request for use of city property that the city has recently received from Pastor Nan Riddle, who is here tonight on behalf of the Othello Christian Church. They are interested in using the city-owned gravel lot on 9th Avenue and Pine Street to bring the Compassion International Compassion Experience Change the Story presentation on Friday, May 30th from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., Saturday through Monday, May 31st through June 2nd, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Tuesday, June 3rd from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m. So to summarize, Compassion International is one of the largest child development and sponsorship organizations across the country. It serves more than 1.3 million children in 26 of the world's poorest countries. So currently there are more than 1.3 million children in their program, and there 100,000 of them are waiting to be matched with a sponsor. So basically what the Change the Story presentation does is it brings the trailers that you can see here. They come in on semis and they're sat down, and so what the trailers can do is basically are set up to provide a real life experience for the people that are walking through to show them how their support and sponsorship can bring the success that it can bring a child in a impoverished country, kind of what kind of support that can do and kind of how it can change their life. So basically they'll walk in through the trailers and they'll start from being a child and kind of, you know, what it's like to live in poverty, and then it takes them through a child's life who was sponsored and how that has kind of transformed their life and made them successful through whether it's emotional support, you know, financial support and whatnot. So the two trailers themselves will have a total footprint of 120 feet by 60 feet. They won't require any sort of electrical hookups or anything, even though those could be provided through the park. They are self-sufficient, and the Change the Story tour staff will be responsible, along with some volunteers from the Othello Christian Church, with set up and take down. So it's very minimal, requirements on behalf of city staff to be able to set this up. But we present it tonight because Pastor Riddle would like to be able to kind of start the marketing, so we wanted to be able to present it to council and answer any questions you guys might have in order to then bring it next council meeting for acceptance by the council. Are there any questions?
Yes. I'm not sure where exactly that is that you're proposing.
The gravel lot on 9th and Pine, so it's basically west of the Lions Park Apartments, and it's right across the street.
So it's all going to take place on that lot?
Correct.
Oh, wow, okay. For somehow, when I was looking at the drawing, I was thinking that you were going to block the street, and so that was just a question I had. So
there shouldn't, not. We measured it, I went and measured it prior to this, and also if you look on the county's website with MapSifter, you can kind of get a good gauge of how many feet are there, and it, from what we see, it should work perfectly. When they come, obviously, you know, things could change, but we do have another option up at the parking lot in north of the park in Lions Park. So there's two options there, but this is the option that they have chosen and would like to move forward with.
Okay. Council, do you have any questions? I don't see any problem with what they want to do. Okay. Pastor Nan, do you want to make any comments?
Excuse me.
Can you come to the microphone, please, and introduce yourself for the record?
It's just such an amazing opportunity for our community because they only go to really big cities. And I went through it a couple of years ago at a conference I went to, and I came out of that conference going, how do I get this to come to my town, to Othello, Washington? And it's taken 2 years to get someone to call me back. And so it's a major, it's just major. When you go through those trailers, the actual child, they have three different children whose life was changed. They tell their life story. You can't even tell you're in trailers. It's such an amazing experience. When you're finished with it, you think, oh my goodness, you have no idea what children live in many parts of the world, in third world countries. And what I love about Compassion International, too, is they take a child all the way from birth, all the way through. Like the girl that I did is one from Africa, so it's Jillian. She'd be one of the choices you'd have. And you put on these headphones, and you hear her voice. She actually, with Compassion International, by the time it's all said and done, and you go through her story, she has a graduate degree from Duke University. Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing what they do. And so it's just such a it's such an opportunity because I found that when you direct a community's opportunity on poverty elsewhere, it shines a spotlight on the circumstances of where you live as well. And you begin to see children who are walking home, children at the park, mothers with four or five children in the Walmart that are only eating candy and they look half starved to death. You begin to look at that differently. And you begin to think about your own community, and it really raises the bar on where a community's at. And so I feel like it's just one more step in Othello towards giving children every chance that they have here to be successful in the United States of America, to equip them with education, to equip them with healthy lunches and dinners and all those kinds of things. So it's amazing. I'm just thankful that they're coming. And it'll require the whole community to be behind this because, and that's why we're not doing it. We could do it in the church parking lot, but then it puts it on one church's parking lot like it's a one church thing, and it's not. You know, no one church here could pull this off. So this is like, I'm going to be talking to our mayor. I want to talk to him, to other civic leaders, to the Rotary Club, all the different community clubs, the schools, because it will take an entire community behind this. So so thank you so much for listening and for just entertaining it. And so begin to get excited about it because this is just major.
Okay. Wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Any questions or comments from the council? Okay. I just have a question for Molly. Are we going to put this then on for approval on the next council meeting?
Yes.
Is that the plan?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Very good.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you, Pastor Nan.
Thank you, Pastor Nan, for coming. Item 2.303 on our agenda now is the special event policy and application. Molly, you have a presentation.
Thank you again. So, council may remember in the last couple department head reports we've had, we've talked about Parks and Rec working on a special event policy and also an application to kind of make the application to have a special event in our parks a more fluid process, more helpful for event directors because they are doing a service. They are bringing lots of people to town, lots of visitors. You know, they're bringing in commerce to our businesses. And so what they're doing, what we want to do is try to help them, but also just make the process more simple altogether. So kind of what we've started to do and what I've worked with the city clerk's office on and all the department heads that are involved is to put together an application that really goes from start to finish that has all the requirements for the city, but not just the city, also the Adams County Health Department, you know, what we're gonna need from the fire department, what we're gonna need, you know, who's gonna have to sign off on it from the city. And so the special event application is basically from A to Z. You'll notice if you were to print it out yourself, it's quite lengthy, and I hesitate to, you know, to say that it might scare people off because there's so much information, but we want to make sure that, you know, it's kind of a one-stop shop for people, because I know I've even heard from people in the community that it's really confusing for them. They're not sure what the city requires as compared to what the health department requires, and we want to make sure that we're kind of, you know, really opening those doors for communication, and we're kind of all on the same page working together, because, you know, it's a process that involves all of us. So the easier we can make it on everyone, the better. So the first document we have is a draft of the special event policy. And so basically what the special event policy, it allows for the special event application permit and, or special event permit application. And basically outlines the procedure that people will go through when they want to have a special event, and how granting use of city property is completed from start to finish. But it also leaves the special event permit application to be kind of the end-all be-all. It's not as specific as the application because we want the policy to kind of, you know, last throughout time, but the permit application to change as times change, as requirements change. So, and then what we have is the special event permit application, which the first couple pages of the actual application are what the city requires. And so basically in all of those, throughout the pages we'll give, or throughout the application, we first summarize what exactly a special event is. And a special event is defined as any public or private non-routine activity or social gathering conducted on city property where the attendance is estimated to be 150 or more people and in which city services are required. So city services can be anything from extra garbage toters, to public work staff working on site for the event. So we have a number of these events in town, and because, you know, throughout the time that I've been working with them, it's come to light that we kind of just need something to make it a little bit easier on everyone. So, and I know it's going to be a process that will take a little bit of getting used to, but the first couple pages are what exactly the city needs and what we kind of want to remind everyone what's required of them and also what they can and cannot do within the parks. So that's anywhere from event insurance to vendors, what vendors are going to need, what permits they're going to need, who they're going to have to go to, a site map, when that's required, who they're going to have to turn that into, who's going to have to approve of it, a parade application, what they're going to need if they want to have a parade in their event. So basically, like I said, this, what we want it to be is an all-encompassing application. So regardless of your event, if your event has a parade or a dance or has vehicles in the park, you're at least going to have that information to know if you do decide to do it, that's what you have. That's what the city requires. And so I know a lot of times as events develop, people don't always see, you know, well, maybe vendors are a good idea, or maybe that'll draw more people. Maybe we should have, you know, a bounce house on site or something like that. So this kind of just serves as all those kind of to review all that for event directors and to also kind of for liability purposes to cover the city to say, you know, we gave you all the specific information that you will need. And so then we, in essence, cover ourselves, but also, you know, kind of leave them the responsibility to go forward and do what they will with the application materials. So, and then the last pages of the packet are basically everything that's needed for an event that is not, I guess, isn't required for everyone. So they're going to be additional permits and compliance items. So a vendor list, a vehicle list that might be required for setup and takedown, a business license application, so they can include that for all the businesses that are being vendors that don't have one, so they can attach that to their application. So like I said, it's quite lengthy, but I feel like, or we really feel that we're doing, we're kind of helping them, or helping the event directors and the different organizations that put these events on to help the city. And so, you know, the more we can make that process easier, the better we can really, you know, make that teamwork. I think it'll be better for the city and, you know, more successful for all events. So I just wanted to present that to the council and kind of for your review, obviously, and then to note any changes or any suggestions that you guys might have, anything that you've seen throughout events that we might be able to include in here before we bring it to council for acceptance. At the current moment, it's with our insurance risk pool, WCIA, with Tanya Kreitz, our risk management representative. She's reviewing it, and from A to Z, she's awesome. And so she's really, you know, she's very thorough and has seen applications like this throughout her time there. And then we'll send it over to legal. And then, you know, any changes that we're making, we can include throughout then. So If council has any suggestions or, you know, any comments or questions, we'd be happy to listen to those.
I have a question.
Okay.
How did you come up with the fees on that? Was it $200 and a $400 fee, right?
The fees, we had actually set out to have, I think, fees that were based on kind of city services. So garbage, our public works staff, water that would be used. And so when we presented those, we then kind of got some feedback from some of the special event organizations that had put them on that kind of wanted to have a say in what was involved. So we sat down with the special event organizers and we all kind of came to an agreement that, you know, these were acceptable for the time being, and given the, you know, kind of the work that they do, it was a good trade and good, I guess, it just was something that we came to agreement on.
We went through the process last year when we went through the process with all the parks and rec fees.
And so is that application fee, is that in addition to any of the park use fees?
No, that's a set fee. So regardless of, so if you're an event that's like a two-day event, so say Fiesta Amistad, and you need staff or anything like that, regardless of how long your event is, it's a one-time use fee. So just like last year with the senior center having the farmers market, because they only have 50 or, you know, under 500 people per event, they just paid the $200 fee for the set amount of time. So we try to be workable, but obviously, you know, there are city services that are being used. And so it's definitely something that we're probably not making all of our money back, but like I said, it is a service to the city and it was something that was agreed upon. So we are moving forward with those prices. Does anyone else have any questions or anything they'd like to add or see or any suggestions?
Do you think it would be possible to do a streamlined app for regularly recurring events like the 4th of July, meaning two pageling? Has anything changed?
Yes.
Because, you know what I'm saying? Because I appreciate the work that you've done because it's comprehensive, very comprehensive. And I understand why, and I'm sure the city's insurance people are all clapping their hands for something like this as well, you know, for liability purposes. But there are certain events that are held year after year after year, and there's very little change in what they do. For instance, the 4th of July is one that comes to mind. There may be others. And so those particular events, do you need the volume of information all over again, the same thing repeated on an application?
We don't, and that's a good point, because we actually kind of initially started this process this year and just sent to all the recurring events that we've had since I've started, just the first page application that gave the general info on the event. So, you know, date and time, setup, takedown, who's our point of contact, what shelters you're looking to use, what park, and how many vendors you anticipate. So that's something that we can send out, you know, every year, and we wanted to kind of get a jump on so we know once this process gets done, you know, we can meet with everyone to anticipate, okay, this is what we're looking at, this is what we're going to need. I would anticipate using the special event application for everyone the first year when we get started with it. But then after that, we can do the more streamlined one-page application and kind of say, you know, to go through and maybe on a back page just say, you know, check off here for all of these. We are going to have to have additional pages for site maps and
yes,
for like vehicle load, unloading and loading permits and vendor lists. But that's something that, you know, like I said, we can streamline, make a lot shorter. We just want to make sure that we give the information at first and it's there, and then we can certainly go from there. So, and like when we're working with the chamber, we can also, I've been working to kind of create a new vendor application for them. And that's something that we can offer, you know, if we just offer kind of a template, we can offer that to all of the events and just say, if you'd like to use this, make a copy and it's yours, just give it to your vendors. And so that's another thing that we can do that kind of helps them go along with the application, but it makes a lot shorter on, or it makes a lot more condensed on their end, so.
Molly, the distinguishing thing, I guess, is the next question I have is, like, for instance, swim team may have, you know, I mean, they're having their special event, right? But then what if they just have a swim meet? Does that require an application?
Well, for that, because we have our pool rental application.
That's inclusive of that?
Yeah.
What about, like, a softball league or how about a softball tournament?
Yes. Well, not just a regular softball tournament, but like, so Charles Garcia has his Hispanic State softball tournament every year. Because he's requested full use of the park, then he would have to do, he has to come to council and ask for, or he has to ask for use of city property. But we have just a general tournament application that is for, you know, those fields. But basically what this is for is more of the what we don't cover in our tournament or pool rentals, you know, it's, are you using full exclusive use of the park? And so that's kind of what this is applicable to. But you're right, we should definitely specify in there that it's separate from those applications as well, so.
For a softball tournament, you need.
Right.
Yeah, this application is for, and then other applications, and then identify.
Right.
But yeah, very good. Well done, Molly.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving right along, item 2.04, water tower maintenance contract. And I believe, Terry, you have some
good evening, Mayor and Council. Back in late fall when we did our budgeting process, we brought to you a proposal for a 7-year perpetual contract for full maintenance on our water towers. We budgeted $265,000 a year here for that as a capital line item. It had a lot of sureties in it, guarantees in it, lifetime on paint, things like that. Well, due to legislation in the state of Washington, they don't allow us to write a full maintenance contract that's open-ended perpetual. We can only write a 3-year. So, Debbie, can you? This is your 3-year water tower maintenance here. We've got, you can see the $3 million in Lions Park, the $1 million in Lions Park, and then the red and white tower is into the fourth year of what was originally the 7-year contract that we, full maintenance contract we had. You don't see emergency services in there. You don't see washouts in there. Those are all extra money. You don't see any money at the bottom of this because due to bidding processes, the vendors asked us not to show that portion of it because we haven't gone out for bids yet. I've brought this back to council because there's only a couple words in the water side of it, potable water side of it, that has to be changed in order to be a perpetual contract, and it'll save the city a lot of money. But until the legislature changes those, and MSRC, John Capeta, and Utility Services, John Ketchin are working on that, it could be a year, it could be two. If we do a year or two and they get it changed, then they can pick up what we've done and apply a warranty to it and then do a perpetual contract, and it will continue down the road. This contract right here, this 3-year, is a defined scope of work, is what puts it into that category. This contract here is still under budget. We still get the work done. We just don't get a lot of the guarantees that we got with the ongoing contract for the city. So we haven't gone out to bid yet. I did meet with the Water and Sewer Committee, discussed it in depth with them, and I wanted to bring it to council, to the full council, so you understood what you're looking at before we go out. If it does get changed, then they have no problem swinging it over and carrying it on We'll have to, at this time, we'll have to stick with the 3-year. It's the best we can do through the laws. Any question?
So, what council action will be required?
What's that?
To go to bid.
We'll have to go out to bid, and then we'll bring it back to council and let them know what we've got or who's award the bid to for the contract. That'll be at a later date as soon as we throw it out for the bid contract.
The initial proposal was for 7 years.
Yeah.
Stretched out over 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't any way we can run that concurrently. I mean, like, we do a 3-year and then another 3-year and then just a 1-year.
Yeah, we can. We can do 3 years at a shot, but we got to run the first 3 years and then we have to send it back out for rebid. And bid it again. Process.
They can't. The state law only let us do 3-year contracts.
Yeah, you can only do
so 3. So they won't allow us to
no.
do an initial bid for concurrent 3-year contracts.
3-year only and then back out to bid.
They allow open-ended contracts on the sewer side of things, but not on the water side. There's just a few, like you said, there's just a few
verbiage
words in the RCWs that need to be changed in order for us to be able to do an open-ended contract on the water side. And everybody they've talked to has said that makes sense, but they've got to go through the process of changing it. And so right now the state will only allow us the 3-year contracts.
Wow, that's unfortunate.
We save a lot of money the other way, but yeah. We just can't get by the bid laws, state laws.
Well, we figured the budget for 7 years for a certain amount of money. Are we going to try to cover that in this 3-year contract?
We're going to
all of it.
You can't do it all in 3 years, because if you did it in 3 years and I put what's in a 7-year into a 3-year, you'd have to go to your piggy bank. It'd be a lot more money than what we've allowed in our budget process. So what we've done was we've taken the best of 7 years, put it in 3, and still kept underneath the budget and got the work done until we could get the verbiage changed in the laws to be able to allow us to go to a 7-year perpetual contract.
Because most of that was a maintenance fee, an annual maintenance fee on their part to do.
Yep. And you lost, there's a lot of washouts in here, emergency inspections in here. A lot of the risk was put back on the utility services and not the city, but the other way on a 3-year, the city picks up all the risk for it.
Wasn't it a little over $2 million the total for the 7 years?
Yeah, something like that. I don't have it right here in front of me, but yeah.
The first 3 years the first year was our initial biggest expense.
Correct.
To it.
Will we still be able to get the first tower done this year?
We plan on that in the first year, the $3 million, and then your $1 million, and then as you can see in the 7 year, it skips to the 4. I tried to push the red and white tower into that 3rd year, but there's not enough money built into here for them guys to pull that off with what we pay them. So I had to be outside the 3-year contract. So, but yeah, that's our goal is to get this to bid, get it in here, get it awarded, and then move on.
But if it goes out to contract, somebody else could bid on that.
That's true.
Yes.
Also, so it possibly could be in there if the bids come in.
Mm-hmm.
Under.
Yep.
That's true.
Yeah. But if the company we have been talking to actually gets the bid, then if that verbiage does get changed, then once we go to the open-ended contract, they'll just give us all of the guarantees that we were supposed to be getting in the first place.
But they may not be the lowest bidder.
Mm-hmm. Potentially.
What's that?
But they may not be the lowest bidder.
Well, we don't know that. That's what I said, if they get the bid.
Right. Okay. Council? Do you have any questions of Terry? Okay.
Yeah.
Eric?
Yeah.
Go on.
That would be a finance officer.
Eric, this was part of it. The other part was for the new well. So it was new well and the well that's, or whatever we're going to do after that. So it's prepared. In fact, most of it was for the wells and part of it was for this. So.
Okay. So
I wish, I only wish we would. No.
Yeah, you can pick some up at the door on the way out. Thank you, Eric. Any further questions? Okay, thank you, Terry.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda, 2.05 14th Avenue reconstruction.
Just want to start here that we've got a couple people in the audience in here that are here to as support to what I'm proposing to council this evening. One's our city engineer, Larry Julius, from GNO, Grant Osborne, and then the other is from CBHA representative Kurt Andrews in the back here. So what I've got is everybody knows that in 2015 we're doing a reconstruction on 14th Avenue. And over that 14th Avenue area, we know that we've got a lot of congestion and traffic. Just a lot of people, a lot of things going everywhere over there. We've got the school district over there. We have a proposal with the Hamptons for some purchases of property from CBHA down there off of that 14th Avenue as well. We've got Olson building his residential homes in there and working on phase three of that. Well, we've had at Public Works, we have a map down there that was dated 2004 it was a concept map from the Planning Commission. And in this, it had a future development for 14th Avenue. The map created shows a roundabout down there on 14th Avenue at Scutney Street. Down at Scutney Street right now, currently, we have a misalignment between two developments down there. The school district's what we call a driveway entrance, which is the continuation of Scutney Street. And then we have Olson's phase coming in, phase three, which is we've looked at here last month, I think it is. And it's got a shift about 15 feet to the south to line up with what Scutney Street is that was originally the school put together. Well, we've looked at many ways of, and we've dealt with the traffic issues down there, and talking to CBHA and the city engineers and things like that, and looking at what the staff had down there, we've looked at this roundabout in several different directions and several different ways as to how we can eliminate and calm the traffic. And we figure that a roundabout would be a good set in that setting to keep traffic flowing, but yet calm the traffic so you don't have a lot of speed. We know that we can't stop the traffic. Once you stop the traffic, you back up. We know that if we put a light down there, a traffic light down there, that'd be really the only light until you get the main that'll be down there. So you might get a couple cars through that before the light changes, and then you go on down and you go a little further north and you get Ash and 14th and Cemetery, and they got a three-way stop there, so you may get a couple cars through that. So we have, can we go to the next screen, Debbie? This is, that's not a very good picture. I think you have some in your package right there. This is a 200 foot diameter circle here, radius. It's a roundabout. It's basically centered over the center line of Scutney Street. You really can't see that. It's kind of a really poor deal right there. So anyway, we have this is the roundabout that we're proposing here. You can see this line right here from the street on Scutney Street, how it tapers down into this. This shifts about 15 feet to the south to line up on this center line of this road right here. This is not a full width of Scutney Street over here. This is just a 40-foot driveway. CBHA is proposing down here to build a medical campus down in this area right here. They're going to produce some traffic. The school district obviously produces some traffic. You have Mr. Olson, Olson Holmes, he's working on this third phase right here. So you got both of these sides of Scutney Street and the street that have got to be developed here in the next go around. So between all of this with residential, you have Sagewood or and Ashwood Notch, and they have a lot of houses over there. So you're getting a lot of traffic. You're going to have a lot of traffic down Scutney Street right here to start with. So in this circle here, we figured that this traffic that comes up in here, and if you kept this traffic moving, that you stand a better chance than backing traffic up and people stopping at the intersections at that point and creating congestions. Now we know that in this whole series right here that we've got to have crosswalks for pedestrians, and we know that, and that's a safety issue for kids. It is done. It's doable. I believe it's doable in some training, but we've seen them where the crosswalks aren't right here at the end of this roundabout. They've been moved down the street here a little way, so they're not right directly here, and so it's moved away from this roundabout, so you don't have a conflict of stopping traffic and going. With a little bit of education to the cross guard, the crossing guards, supervisors, I think that we can get over that hump on the pedestrian side. Let's go to the washout slide there. This is at a washout here. This is an actual oval roundabout, as you can see right here. This oval side would lay north and south on 14th Avenue. So we get the little longer version there, and we wouldn't spread out so wide on the overall, because that street, if I'm not correct, if I'm wrong, there is 90 feet overall on 14th. For the future, when we build, it'd be 90 feet overall on that. So WashDOT's put these in. This is an oval roundabout. We figure this will work. You can see the crosswalks right in here. You can actually move them down a little further so they're not so up so tight in this end of it. We think it'll work for the application that we have down there. as we move down a little further from that roundabout, we pass the 20 acres there that CBHA's proposing to use. But we run in down there at the bottom end of Columbia Street. Columbia Street coming through.
Go to the other map. Mm-hmm.
No, that's not it. That's
what is that first one?
No. You're going to come down.
Top one.
Okay, so let's stay with that one right there. In your packet, you have a color page here that I've made for you. This is out of Map Sifter here. In your first page there, you should see 7th and Columbia Street on your first color page. And you have a red line there, and it kind of shows a lazy S to the north. When you get down to Columbia Street and it comes out, right down here in this shaded area is a commercial lot, and it runs to SR 26. This street right here has to be at least 300 feet from the intersection, the northern property right-of-way of Washington, 300 feet to the south line of Columbia Street in order for it to be usable as a street. So we have to in this road, we have to actually bend. We have to actually make an S, lazy S, so to speak, to get above this commercial property when we come out right here. So what we're proposing is that with the Hamptons and CBHA and the city and the talks that we've had, that we need to put our water line in our right-of-way. instead of on private property. Right at this time, the way it's drawn up with CBHA, it's inside the property line because they don't really own the property outside their property line. So the Hamptons would like to see Columbia Street kind of stuffed up to the southern boundary, most boundary of CBHA's property, which would be right here when they purchase it. Am I right, Kurt? Right in here. So this being Columbia Street, if it was stuffed up here, then we miss this commercial property when we come out on 14th from the west. We continue straight west, and then we make a lazy S down, and we connect it to Columbia Street at 7th. And what that does for us is we have to make that S somewhere in this process, whether we go straight on through to the east, and then we make the S and get above this commercial, or we do it early on, and we bypass a lot of the debris that's down in the, that's been put in there for fill down at the theater. Instead of having to dig through it, we make that lazy S to the left, and we swing it right up on top of the hill, and then we take it straight right down here to 14th. It lines up with 14th here if you slide it above. What it does is it gives you longer commercial lots down there off of 26 to Columbia Street here on both sides of the road to be used. So I brought this to council tonight. We believe, staff, engineers, we believe that it'll work, the concept will work. We're in the phases right now of making it happen. If we delay any way, shape, or form, we could be halting some of the project for some of the developers like Mr. Olson. He's still working on the third phase. He hasn't brought it to the city yet. So in relations, is we'd like to be proactive and meet with the school district and meet with Mr. Olson and take the proposal back there while they're there. And the traffic issues will have to be mitigated between three different property owners to help out with this roundabout. We don't have a price for the roundabout at this time. We will have later. We just don't have that number. We kind of rushed to put this in together just to get this up so that you knew about it. But we did meet with the street committee and presented this to them. So they're all kind of aware of what we've got going on. So we're just looking for support from council to move forward.
I got a little bit of on that roundabout thing, which was brought up to me also, the pedestrian issue. Even if you move it farther out, Terry, won't that still, now you're having traffic issue again because you're just stopping them farther out, especially during school hours and stuff like that.
Yep, there's no doubt you're gonna. I believe that you're gonna stop. There's no doubt you're gonna stop somebody at that time. You won't be tucked up to that over or that roundabout as close as you can. A light, $200,000-$300,000 for a light, and you just get a little bit of a movement. But you're right. We're gonna stop traffic. But I don't think if we do some training, I don't think we'll stop it as much as we do with a stop sign. And you have Scutney Street coming out. So you have two stop signs there and traffic north and south.
Well, I think when Scutney finishes coming through there, and if we have a stop sign right there, it's going to cause a lot more confusion. I don't know if anybody's been on Ash Street. It's basically two times during the day, you know, when school starts and when school ends. Mm-hmm. I've seen traffic on Ash Street and 14th backed up a good three blocks at sometimes. And I think we'll potentially have that same problem, especially on Scutney, since it's one of our main streets coming up. It's mm-hmm. a 90-foot street, and I think it's going to greatly increase the traffic on that street, especially when it does go all the way through.
Well, there's a lot of people right now currently taking using Cypress and Gemstone to get to that school. And it's a race to get around the blocks to get there first. So as soon as Scutney opens up, you'll probably see that line up just like Ash Street. It'll be a pretty good. If you can keep the traffic flowing and keep them moving, I think you stand a better chance instead of stop and go right here.
So,
I think we really need to investigate
and study hard on the pedestrian part of it. You know, I understand about flow of traffic and stuff like that, but we got to protect them kids, cut and dry.
Just a comment on what he's saying. They're already crossing that road as it is. And it's not even on a street. It's in the middle of the block. There's a walking path there, and then they walk across. So they're stopping it anyway.
Yeah, but there's not cars moving around, you know, in the circle.
Well, and that's why he's saying we put the pedestrian crossings out further so that you're not crossing in that circle area. We kind of looked at it and we went, okay, stoplight or roundabout. The stoplight's going to back things up way worse than they already are.
Corey? I'm totally with Eugene on that, the kids. And,
oh,
but yeah,
I, yeah.
What she was saying is talking about where they're putting those crosswalks at.
Well, I just see them stopping at the cross stop now instead of at a red light at the intersection. You understand what I'm saying? I see what you're saying about moving it back, but
yeah.
That's going to be a red light there during school because you're going to stop. They're going to let, you know, 8 or 10 kids pile up, and then they're going to walk them all through. We're going to have to sit there while they walk across. I don't know, just thought.
Yeah, but
I'm
of
just
course,
throwing things
but of course
out.
Yeah, but of course, you know, once they're done, then the traffic will move through, you know.
So the light just changed.
Fluidly, yeah. Yeah, but as opposed to the light changing a lot more often. You know, there are times when there's not as many kids going through.
That is true.
Also,
so
pedestrian bridge is something. No, that's not cheap.
That would be real expensive.
So each travel lane is 33 feet. The center lane, is that a turn lane?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's going to have left-hand turn lanes?
Left and right?
Left and right, from coming from both directions. So that's not going to block traffic, people going in and out off of 14th. And then you have sidewalks on both sides. Right now there is none.
You just got a walk path. Comes down to Juajitos from Cemetery, and then you got to cross, and then you get back on the walk path, which connects to the sidewalk at Gemstone further down to the south.
Those are just temporary that they put in there for the time being until there are sidewalks?
Yeah, that was to get kids to school across the field that didn't have any gravel or road or...
So there will be sidewalks on both sides all the way down 14th once construction
I believe that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
From Scutney Elementary to Highway 26?
Should be. We should have, I show sidewalks on both sides.
And new decorative street lights like are going to be installed on 14th and Main?
They were tiki lamps. You have to light them at night. No, I'm just kidding.
They will match.
There was trees planted in there, showed.
Larry's shaking his head. So what? We are going to have those same decorative lights and street lamps going down that? Yes.
We just talked about that today. We do have...
Thank you. We do have funding in the TIB, or the Transportation Improvement Board grant, for lighting. It's not been completely developed yet as we're just getting into design, but there was monies put aside for the lighting along 14th. And we'll be working with the beautification committee for the particular type of light. We got a lot of information on that already, so we should be able to plug that in.
From Highway 26 all the way down to
Cemetery Ash, Road.
Or Cemetery Road, yes. Okay. I want to give Ken Johnson a chance before I go. So was there something you wanted to say?
I just had one other question. I don't know if I heard it right, if the roundabout went in there, the street that is currently 40-foot would be proposed to 90-foot?
That's the overall right-of-way on 14th.
What's so-called a driveway right now would be?
Well, that's 40 feet of actual surface face, curb to curb. CBHA is they have a proposal in the back for townhouses off of that backside of what would be Scutney that would go through to future 18th. Well, we've talked through our talks. They're willing to give us some extra property to widen that road out to the original width.
The Scutney Street, which was supposed to be 90 to start with.
Correct. And what that'll do is that'll make it a lot easier for them. For the traffic it's actually going to pick up on, and it'll actually, by them giving us that, it puts the street back out to where it's supposed to be. The roundabout helps us on the oval side because of the misalignment in there. We don't have to do so much of the misalignment. We can actually move that around, and we can actually make that work and still be able to accommodate the new property owners and the other people that are there. So it'll give us a full width of Scutney clear to the back of the property. Into what would be future 18th. And I think, I believe it, correct me if I'm wrong, Kurt, but the Hamptons have agreed to 18th. Okay, he hasn't heard back, but we were looking to move that water line out into what would be future 18th instead of on private.
Okay.
So it was kind of a plus all the way around. We're trying to work with a lot of people to get involved in this so that we're kind of proactive so we can kind of take it down the road and make this thing all come together in 15.
Picking up on something someone said earlier, and that has to do with 14 and Ash Street at Scutney's Elementary. I don't like it. I don't like that whole intersection. I don't like how you have to stop. I don't like how there's so many bumps, you know, driving up into that. And in the morning, I mean, is there any way we would have to negotiate with Othello School District, but what if we put a roundabout in that particular area? It would have to go into the school district's property because we couldn't go into that private property where that residence is on the corner of 14th and Ash, you know what I'm talking about. Could we do something along that lines, and would that help? Because all those stops and all that, I just don't like how that was designed or planned out. It was like, it was an afterthought almost. Well, we better put a stop sign up here. And I just, you know, that's a main entrance into the city, and especially now if you're gonna, you know, do all this construction next year, don't we wanna make it easier to get into the city rather than having, you know, these stop signs and these little obstacles that we're talking about, Larry?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, that's one thing that we could look at as we're laying out the design for 14th. Even though the project we have now stops at Cemetery or just north of Cemetery, where we transition back into the existing 14th, we can take a look at what it would take to go the next step up and at least get past Ash. Mm-hmm. And we could also make that a separate schedule in the bid.
Yes.
So that if we get really competitive prices, we might be able to get it done at the same price that we have in the grant.
That was something we did discuss in the committee, and we did say that would be ideal if we're putting one roundabout in to get rid of that stop sign and put a second roundabout in, and then this traffic would flow a lot more smoothly. But we were like, okay, well, where's money?
What are we going to do? Will the school district cooperate?
Yes,
and
exactly.
Will all
and
that? Because now buses.
Because then
you're going to have to
deal with some right of way and the landowners in the area.
But I think that it's worth the effort.
It's worth the effort.
Yeah, and even if the city has to purchase some property, it's worth the effort.
That's right.
I believe that stop sign was put in when Wahitas was built because of the SEPA report?
There was a traffic study done for that intersection of that portion of the street, and that was the recommendation that come out of that traffic study to put the stop signs in there.
One thing we could look at with the roundabout, it's pretty much required when you start to pre-design of a roundabout to do a study, because you want to make sure you've got your traffic flowing, your pedestrians flowing correctly, bicycles, residential traffic, commercial traffic, etc. We could take a look at that intersection and see what might happen with a roundabout at Scutney. Could we get rid of the stop signs on 14th at Ash and just let the traffic continue to flow north-south? They'll be coming out of a roundabout. In theory, their speed should still be down, even though they're going a little bit further to the north. Keep the stop sign at Ash, but remove them possibly on 14th. It's something that could be looked at.
So, path forward is?
Excuse me?
The path forward is?
To take a look at it.
Okay, you'll do that?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Council, any further questions, discussion on that? Very good. Well done, gentlemen. Thank you. Next item on our agenda, item 2.06, Open Public Meetings Act. Debbie?
Governor Inslee recently signed a state bill relevant to government training for all elected officials and appointed officials. And all elected officials and appointed officials must take open meetings training and public records and records retention within 90 days after starting their new duties. So they're trying to figure out, how do we do that this year? They would like for training to begin in 2014. Training will have to be done every 4 years, so it'd be a good base year to get your training done. The Washington State Auditors have partnered with MRSC, and they have hour and a half workshops, and they're located very close to us in the fall. There's one in Yakima, Richland, and Wenatchee. It's easy to register for one of these. Just go to, if you receive their AWC newsletter, it'll have a link to the different workshops, and you can register yourself, or we can register you for the training. I really think that there'll probably be webinars developed later on to accommodate this training too, but we haven't heard of those yet. So as you register for an event, please let me know which event you're going to, because if we have a quorum going to a specific training, I need to have a notification that we will have a quorum available at one of these workshops to be in compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act. And that's one of the training requirements that you'll be attending to. So something to think about is, how does that work into your schedule this year? And we can help you register if you need help with registration.
And that's after July?
It'll take effect July 1st. And yeah, all the training is in, I think, September so far. But I know that there will be other opportunities come up.
Okay. So will you just keep us posted
yes.
on that, please?
Cool. You've been there.
Questions, Council? No? Okay. Very good. Are there any committee reports to be given tonight? Okay. Item 4, unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business? Item number 5, new business. Is there any new business to come before the City Council tonight? No? I do have one announcement. Next, at our regularly scheduled City Council meeting next Monday, the 14th of April, we will have a 6-year street plan public hearing. And we've set that again for next Monday, April 14th. So that'll be available on the board documents and to the public when it's posted sometime late next week. Is that correct, Terry?
Yes.
Very good. Okay. Is there any other business to come before the City Council tonight?
Tomorrow? Fire meeting.
Fire Council meeting tonight. I mean, tomorrow night, 7 o'clock. The Fire Council Committee meeting tomorrow night at 7 at the Adams County Fire District 5, 7 o'clock.
Any other business? Any other announcements? Okay, very good. With that, no further business to come before the Council. We we adjourn.